The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Jory Slodke for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Discover. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the November-December 2025 issue. We begin with our cover story, Time-Sensitive Matters, Perceptions, Theories, and Realities About the Nature of Time. We've heard it said that time is an arrow, always moving in one direction at a uniform rate. But the field of physics is constantly challenging our understanding of time's true nature, helped over the years by the ideas, theories, and questions of some of the greatest minds in science, philosophy, and even fantasy. Is time actually real, or just a trick of our perception? Will time travel ever be possible? And if so, what would that experience be like? Does time have a beginning or an eventual end? While there may be no definitive answers to these and other temporal deliberations, that hasn't stopped scientists and theorists from devoting their attention and their time to the subject. Why do humans perceive time the way we do? Physics challenges our understanding of time. As human beings, we can't really think of ourselves without time. We organize our days around its passing. We define ourselves through the events that have been encoded into our memories. Experiences unfold through a present that passes relentlessly from one moment to the next. And we make plans to achieve our goals with the knowledge that tomorrow will arrive on schedule, as it always does. This is the phenomenology of time, or what neuroscientists call time consciousness. These aspects, or layers of our experience of time, have played an important role in informing our intuitions about the nature of physical time. We assume that it has directionality, moving from an unchangeable past to an immersive present to an unknown future, and that all of the above unfolds at a uniform rate throughout the cosmos. But the more scientists have scrutinized the concept of time, the more they've come to understand that these common sense assumptions may not reflect time's true nature. The first radical shift in our understanding of time came with the widespread scientific acceptance of Albert Einstein's theories of relativity. Up until then, scientists adhered to the idea of Newtonian time, or absolute time, believing time existed independently of a perceiver and progressed at a constant rate everywhere. Relativity changed all of this. By perceiving space and time as interwoven material, Einstein explained how mass warps this fabric to create gravity. The implications for merging space and time meant that mass not only distorted space, it distorted time too. Einstein's theories have been proven and have since inspired a number of real-world impacts. But to pick just one example, today, GPS satellites have to account for Earth's varying distortion of space-time at different locations by adjusting the clocks in satellites and building mathematical corrections into their computer chips. Without this adjusting for relativity, Earth's GPS systems would fail in just a couple of minutes. While an objective universal present is at odds with general relativity, the human intuition that a now permeates throughout the cosmos is a product of adapting to an understanding of our unique nook in the universe. Humanity lives in a corner of the cosmos with low space-time curvature, on the surface of a small planet whose mass only distorts the passage of time to a small degree relative to our perception of its passing. We perceive the world mostly in seconds, but in a day, satellite clocks will only deviate from Earth's surface clocks by 38 microseconds. If we instead lived somewhere in the universe with large space-time curvature, say, at the edge of a massive black hole, then differences in the passing of time at different space-time locations would be much more exaggerated and obvious, assuming that living in such a hostile place was even possible. We see this phenomenon in popular culture when Matthew McConaughey's character in the film Interstellar becomes marooned for a few hours on a planet that orbits a supermassive black hole, but returns to his ship to find that 27 years have passed on Earth. Similarly, relativity predicts that time slows down more and more the closer you get to the speed of light. However, the velocity of most objects we interact with on Earth travel at negligible speeds with respect to the speed of light. The human experience of time makes it natural to conceive of a global present, because the differences in the passing of time created by an object's speed and their space-time location is minor, they become unnoticeable to the bluntness of human sense perception and information processing. From a human perspective, the distinction between past, present, and future, or the arrow of time, seems self-evident. But as physicist Carlo Rovelli, author of The Order of Time, points out, the elementary laws of nature, which include the laws of classical mechanics, motion, electrodynamics, electric charges and currents, and thermodynamics, energy, are all invariant under the reversal of time. In other words, they permit a time-reversed version of the phenomena they describe. For example, if we were to watch a film of our solar system once in reverse, and then moving forward in time, it would be very difficult to discern which was which. Currently, the only physical law that has non-reversible directionality is the second law of thermodynamics, which roughly states that, statistically, closed systems, or systems in which a set amount of matter is maintained over time, move from ordered states to disordered states, and entropy, a measure of disorder, increases at macroscopic scales gradually. Here's an example. After a demolition team has detonated explosives to reduce a building to rubble, we never see that building spontaneously reassemble back to its prior state. That's because the second law of thermodynamics states that such an event is outside the probabilistic realms of reality. At the subatomic scale, particles don't always obey the second law of thermodynamics, but at the macroscopic scale of reality we occupy, probability dictates that thermodynamic events will leave reliable traces of the past. We can see craters on the moon, find fossils from extinct creatures, and watch shooting stars burn up in the atmosphere. Humans have evolved within the specific physical parameters of the universe, where there is a well-defined time orientation, and abundant traces of the past exist at geological, evolutionary, and neural timescales everywhere we look. Those signs instill in us a certain confidence in the past as something that precedes the present, and in time itself as something that moves forward, not backward. Of course, time is not so set in its ways in our imagination. One of the human neural system's primary functions is to process information about the past, learn, and then predict what conditions could be like in the future. And it is our ability to consciously access our memories that enables this mental time travel. In a 2013 study in the journal Cortex, amnesiac patients showed a reduced ability to imagine future scenarios. While our memories allow us to recreate our past and simulate our future, we aren't able to foresee what lies ahead with any real certainty. The result is an understanding that the events of the days, weeks, and years to come are unknowable, no matter how much we try to envision our fate. In short, the particular space-time conditions of our solar system, the tendency for systems to move from low entropy to high entropy, and the indeterminacy of the future combined to create our particular conception of time. While this understanding might not extend to the physical extremes of reality, humans are likely justified in speaking about it in these terms. That is, until we become an interplanetary civilization. At that point, it might be time to redefine our terms. Does time have a beginning or end? As far as we can tell, time will have no end in the future. Our universe is expanding every day, and it appears that it will continue to do so for eternity. The future is wide open, and there will always be another tomorrow. Sure, in the far, far future, everything in the universe will be spread out to incomprehensibly thin dust, but time still won't come to an end. However, by the same token, it appears as if time does have a beginning. Since our universe is expanding, it must have been smaller in the past. We don't know for sure what went on in the earliest moments of the universe, but we know that billions of years ago, it was much smaller. Around 13.77 billion years ago, our universe is thought to have been roughly the size of a peach, with a temperature of over a quadrillion degrees. Beyond that point, all of our physics knowledge says that the universe started out in such a tiny space that it was a singularity, a point of infinite density. Strictly speaking, that's also a point where time and space originate, meaning that time has an endpoint or starting point in our own past. Forget the past. A mathematician reveals a strange enigma for time travelers. The laws of physics may not strictly forbid time travel, but if it's possible, these same laws would lead to some outlandish consequences, according to a 2024 study published on the RXIV server, an open-access archive of scholarly articles. Author Lorenzo Gavassino, a mathematician at Vanderbilt University, discovered some previously unknown side effects of time travel, one of which is that any human who made the journey would not be able to remember it when they returned. How do the laws of physics lead to this disappointing conclusion? It turns out that just one law is responsible, the second law of thermodynamics, that the entropy, or disorder, of any system always increases over time. Unlike all other laws, the second law distinguishes between time running forward and backward. Eggs never unbreak, milk never unmixes from coffee, and so on. In a series of thought experiments, Gavassino has now shown that this has important consequences for a spaceship carrying a time traveler that follows a circular path through space-time. In other words, a journey that ultimately returns the traveler back to the same instant in time. A key feature of this circular journey is that the entropy must be the same at the beginning and at the end, because the traveler returns to their original state. So if the entropy increases over time, there must be a point in the circle where it is at maximum before returning to its original value. Gavassino says that the consequences for the time traveler passing beyond this point of maximum entropy are clear. All thermodynamic processes, including biological processes such as memory formation and aging, are reversed, he says. Memories of an observer inside the spaceship are necessarily erased by the end of the journey. Gavassino's findings have significant implications for our understanding of time and causality. While the study does not determine whether time travel is possible, it sheds light on the strict conditions that must be met in such scenarios. In a universe with closed time-like curves, time travel would not resemble the freewheeling adventures of science fiction. Instead, travelers would confront a world governed by rigid self-consistency, disrupted causality, and erased memories. Of course, wannabe time travelers will look for potential loopholes in Gavassino's argument. One possibility is that while the second law of thermodynamics applies to a system as a whole, it need not necessarily apply to its component parts. There may be a way that some parts of a system could decrease in entropy, while the others increase in entropy in a way that ensures the total entropy follows the required conditions. Indeed, that's how human memories form and are retained anyway. This could provide a way for humans and their memories to survive a round trip through time, tantalizing food for thought for potential time travelers. A curve in time. Though no one knows whether time travel is physically possible, and it probably isn't, we do know that Einstein's theory of relativity proves the concept is at least theoretically sound. Specifically, his equations allow for closed time-like curves, or CTCs, loops in space-time that end where they begin. An object following one of these circular trajectories would eventually arrive back at the place in time it started and could interact with its past self. Of course, there's no guarantee that they actually exist. Many eminent physicists have argued against the possibility of CTCs, whether naturally occurring or engineered via time machines made by intelligent beings. The laws of physics do not allow the appearance of closed time-like curves, The late physicist Stephen Hawking wrote matter-of-factly in 1992. He half-jokingly dubbed this idea the chronology protection conjecture, a feature of reality that makes the universe safe for historians. But even as a pure thought experiment, time travel is plagued by challenges. In addition to the thorny issue of paradoxes, there are other practical caveats. First off, hypothetical designs for time machines typically require either infinite mass or negative energy, a power source we are nowhere near harnessing. Second, due to the nature of CTCs, a time machine can venture back no farther than the moment of its creation. So, if we do manage to build or discover one, our voyages will still be limited. You'll likely have to abandon those dreams of riding a brontosaurus. Time, the Multiverse, and Everything, on Paradoxes and Parallel Universes. Even within any glimmer of a possibility that time travel might someday be possible, traveling into our own pasts opens up all sorts of noxious paradoxes, as plenty of films and comic book storylines have demonstrated. Beyond the fact that the past is over and done with, we must reckon with the reality that what happened in the past created the present that we experience. To put the paradox succinctly, if you change the past, you change the present, but the present already exists. One of the most common examples of this head-scratching scenario is known as the grandfather paradox. Suppose you travel back in time and kill your own grandfather before he met your grandmother. No need to dissect your motivations behind this hypothetical act here. That means one of your parents was never born, which means you never exist. But if you never existed, how did you go back in time to kill your grandfather in the first place? To address this dilemma, we could invoke the idea of parallel or alternate universes, a concept under the general umbrella of the multiverse. Perhaps when you go back and kill your grandfather, you create a new universe where you don't exist. Presumably, you could then return to your original universe where everything is hunky-dory, or at least you're still alive. Essentially, you only monkeyed around with some other disconnected cosmos. There are, in fact, two places in physics where the multiverse concept pops up. Unfortunately for any wannabe time travelers, neither of them allows for this type of parallel future hopping. The first place where alternate universe theories have gained traction is in quantum mechanics, that branch of physics that seeks to explain how matter and energy work at atomic and subatomic levels. Subatomic processes are inherently random. When we run an experiment, we never know what the result is we're going to get. One explanation for this is that all experimental results happen just in separate universes. If someone shoves an electron through a strong magnetic field, for example, and it has a 50-50 chance of deflecting either up or down, then every time they run an electron through the device, they get two universes, one where the electron went up and one where the electron went down. As the theory goes, this kind of splitting isn't just limited to arcane physics experiments. It happens with every single quantum interaction throughout the cosmos, which is a lot of interactions, thus generating countless parallel worlds. In this view, there is a universe out there that already exists where your grandfather is dead and you were never born. But you can never see it. Even if the theory above is actually happening, the rules of quantum mechanics are absolutely clear. There is no travel or communication between these universes. Granted, universe is probably the wrong word here. That's because the splitting is really separate partitions of a single quantum wave function. And that separation is really permanent. If there was any kind of connection allowed, then the many branching possibilities of quantum processes simply wouldn't happen. The second place where the multiverse pops up in physics is in studies related to the extremely early universe. From this lens, our cosmos could be just one of many, like a bubble in an infinite foam of universes. These universes, too, could contain all the many interesting and varied possibilities that make life so fun. In this extremely hypothetical view, there are many universes out there that contain alternate realities from the one you know. There's one where your grandfather died, there's another where no stars ever formed, and there's a universe where all of your matter is replaced with antimatter, and so on. Because all of these bubble universes exist in the same expanding foam that is reality, those alternate universes really are out there, an unimaginable but still finite distance away. But even in this foam-like collection of bubble universes, time still does its thing. That is, it moves forward, always. Even if you could concoct some scheme to travel among the alternate universes, those universes still share the same space-time fabric, marching forward along with us. Thus, they all appear to forbid time travel, as the theory goes. The loss of apex scavengers is a public health problem. Diminishing populations of vultures, hyenas, and other large scavengers could cause an uptick. It could cause an uptick in zoonotic diseases. Vultures often get a bad rap, but they keep their environments clean. You can think of these birds as nature's garbage collectors, devouring carcasses and other animal material, mopping up potentially harmful pathogens in the process. The problem is that populations of vultures and other apex scavengers are declining worldwide. In fact, over a third of global scavenger populations are at risk. And according to the authors of a June 2025 study in the Proceedings of the Natural Academy of Sciences, this is not just a disaster for biodiversity. It could also spell trouble for human health, as animals like vultures and hyenas have historically curbed cases of rabies, anthrax, and other zoonotic diseases in humans. There's this prejudice that these scavengers, vultures and hyenas and the like, are nasty animals and that we should get rid of them, said Rodolfo Durso, a study author and a professor at Stanford University, in a statement. But they are important not only for the functioning of ecosystems, but also for human well-being. To learn more about the potential consequences of the loss of these animals, Durso and his team studied 1,376 scavenger species, large and small. This included animals from all five classes of vertebrates, fish, amphibians, reptiles, birds, and mammals, ranging from lions and tigers to tortoises and pond turtles. Consulting databases like the International Union for Conservation of Nature's Red List of Threatened Species and previously published research, the team confirmed the population status of each species. The results revealed that 36% of scavengers are facing or have threatened population declines thanks to the deadly combination of habitat loss, livestock agriculture, and wildlife trade. However, not all scavengers are facing the same existential threats, as some smaller species like rats are thriving due to increased food supplies and fewer predators. Scavengers are in decline, but it's not homogenous. It's particularly the large and specialized ones, Durso said. This allows space for the smaller scavengers, which are problematic because they are themselves sources of zoonotic diseases. They are also not capable of compensating as they cannot consume as much carrion. Some ecosystems have already seen what happens when large scavengers decline and small scavengers take over. In the 1990s, for instance, India's vulture population collapsed due to the use of diclofenac, a veterinary drug that's beneficial to livestock but deadly to vultures. When the vultures declined, feral dogs took over as India's carrion consumers, leading to an additional 39 million dog bites and 48,000 rabies deaths between 1992 and 2006. Diclofenac was banned in India in 2006, and the vulture populations there have since stabilized. But there are still millions of people in India and around the world who are killed by zoonotic diseases every year. And according to the team, losing more scavengers would only add to that number, making it increasingly important to tackle the threats against scavengers worldwide. We're starting to understand exactly how we depend on each individual species, said Chinmay Sonowane, another study author and a PhD student at Stanford University. As we become more aware of these connections, we are going to be more inclined to protect these species because, in turn, we are ultimately protecting our health. Has the threat of vanishing vultures spread to the Americas? Vulture populations have dwindled across Europe, Asia, and Africa, prompting concerns about a similar decline in the populations of vultures in North and South America. But could the loss of these scavengers have the same devastating impacts for human health in the Americas as has had in as it has had in India in the past. Recent research suggests that it could. In May 2025, a study published in Ecology and Evolution showed that declining vulture populations could contribute to public health crises in North and South America as well, unleashing deadly diseases on animals and humans alike. This research underlies the unique and irreplaceable role that vultures play as nature's cleanup crew, said Julia Gruters, a study author and a behavioral ecologist at the University of Exeter, Cornwall, in a statement. Unloved and unappreciated, even to the point of persecution, the importance of vultures is stark when you remove them from an ecosystem. To gauge just how important vultures are in environments in the Americas, the study authors traveled to Costa Rica. There, they placed a total of 32 pig carcasses at around 1,640-foot intervals in a forest and in a field. While half the carcasses were available to all scavengers, the other half were placed in cages with netting, preventing larger animals, including vultures, from eating them. Deploying the carcasses over the course of multiple months, the researchers watched as black vultures, turkey vultures, and king vultures visited the sites with accessible carcasses and as smaller scavengers visited those with inaccessible ones. When the researchers measured the rates of decomposition, they found that the uncaged carcasses lost an average of around 21 pounds of mass a day, while the caged ones lost an average of about 11 pounds a day and attracted swarms of insects, including twice as many flies. The results show that when vultures aren't allowed to consume carrion, decomposition takes longer, as the job mainly falls to insects and microbes. This, in turn, gives flies a greater opportunity to eat and reproduce, and to spread infections of anthrax, botulism, salmonella, and E. coli to humans. Feather light. Shine an ultraviolet light on one of the finest specimens of the first fossil bird, and its feathers will appear in an aura of iridescent blue. In May 2025, a team of researchers published a photo of the Chicago Field Museum's Archaeopteryx, a 150 million year old fossil from the Jurassic period, in a paper in Nature. Creating contrast between the fossilized tissue and the surrounding sediment, the UV light allowed the team to spot a new set of feathers that might have helped Archaeopteryx fly. Similar to the tertiary feathers seen on modern birds, this long, lightweight fringe lined Archaeopteryx's upper arms and likely improved its ability to generate lift for flight. According to the researchers, the image may reveal why Archaeopteryx took to the skies while its dinosaur relatives remained flightless, in part thanks to their lack of upper arm fluff. We've run out of time for today's episode of Discover. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Jory Slodke, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Discover is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call area code 919-832-5138. That number again is area code 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.